Athletes love pushing their limits, but intense training can cause serious imbalances. This is exactly what happened to me. My name is Christopher Kelly. When I first entered the world of competitive mountain biking, I became plagued by numerous chronic health issues. So I changed my diet, and I identified my key imbalances with advanced biomedical testing. Before long, I was feeling and competing better than ever. Now, I'm helping other athletes do the same. Welcome to the Nourish Balance Thrive podcast. Hello and welcome to the Nourish Balance Thrive podcast. My name is Christopher Kelly and today I'm delighted to be joined by Sarah Winchek. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, Chris.
Sarah is a friend, a colleague, a client that we've been working with over the last few years, and I'm very excited to have her on the podcast today. Since her teens, Sarah has always been interested in health. From physical fitness to psychology, she has explored the interrelated facets of wellness. In 2011, Sarah graduated from the University of Delaware with a bachelor's degree in psychology and postgraduate studies in counseling. In 2012, Sarah became a Yoga Alliance certified yoga teacher and opened Truly Yoga Studio in January 2015. In 2016, Sarah began the Bulletproof Coaching Program, which focuses on optimizing biology, psychology, and helping people reach their full potential. Sarah, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Chris. Thanks for having me on.
Let's start at the beginning. Tell me about when you first started to suspect that your health was not as good as it could be.
I would probably say I've dealt with a few things in my life, but probably the end of 2015, I first had tonsillitis, believe it or not. That's kind of where it started for me. And throughout that winter of 2015, 2016, I ended up going through about 5 rounds of antibiotics when I thought, oh, I'll just take one antibiotic just like I did when I was a kid and I had strep throat. And I thought, oh, I'll be fine. But then it became very chronic, ended up leading me to get my tonsils removed. So I had a tonsillectomy, which as a side note was one of the most painful things to get done as an adult, but it did happen. And I thought I would be great after that. And then a few months later, I ended up becoming really achy, tired, fatigued. And part of me thought it was just in my head. And I would go to the doctor and they said, you're great. You're healthy. You do yoga. You're awesome. And I thought, there's nothing, you know, that's lining up here. So that's when I started to look into different things. I've always been interested in health and wellness since I was in high school. So I was always trying to kind of go into more of the holistic side of things, but this kind of led me to get a little bit deeper. So I found out about it, you guys, through another podcast that I was listening to, and then my journey kind of began. But believe it or not, it all started with some tonsillitis.
Do you mind me asking how old you are?
I am 28 years old.
Okay. And that's quite old to have your tonsils removed.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. That's interesting. And then so tell me about your hormones. So that was one of the things that we talked about when you first started working.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my hormones were out of whack after I got them tested. And I didn't even think twice about it. I got on birth control, the birth control pill, probably when I was about 21 years old. So I had been on birth control for 7 years of my life. Just like many women, I feel, just go to the gynecologist and they say, oh, just get on the pill. You have some cramps. This'll even you out. And I didn't end up realizing how much an effect it was really having on my system. I was having experiences of my period was a little bit off. I felt like I wasn't a heavy person, but I felt like I probably was a little bit more inflamed than I would like to. I had pelvic inflammation, headaches all the time, stuff that I didn't even attribute to being on the pill until I got off of it and regulated things. But when I saw my results that came back from the testing, my estrogen was really high and my progesterone and my testosterone were almost non-existent. Looking back, even cognitively, my brain felt like it was turned off. It felt like I was depressed, but I knew everything in my life was pretty good. So something biochemically must be going on. And after regulating my hormones, along with a bunch of other things I was doing, I definitely felt a lot better. So I felt like I was doing everything healthy, and I ended up being on the pill. And I said, this was my one vice. But in reality, this one little vice was actually affecting all the different systems in my body. So, yeah.
I really want to understand how this went down very carefully because, you know, I have a 4-year-old daughter and she'll be that age in no time, I'm sure. And so I really want to understand the symptoms or your goals when you went to go and see that doctor and how you ended up on the pill. Can you go into that in a little bit more detail?
Sure. I think I was in college and I was about to go on a trip. I was doing a study abroad to South Africa. It all kind of started. I didn't want to have my period during that trip. I already kind of had a history of my menstrual cycle being a little bit off and I would get some cramping and have some headaches. And so I thought, oh, maybe if I get on the pill, I won't have this. And so I went to the doctor and the doctor said, yeah, that's not good. Just take the pill. There was not much conversation around it. I wasn't given any warnings of, oh, this could maybe affect your hormones or your mood or anything else. So I didn't really think twice about it. I just kind of trusted and took it and continued along with my life. And actually, when I think about it, a few years later, I did even mentally feel a little bit more depressed, a little bit more anxious. So I went back and the gynecologist actually prescribed me Cymbalta, which was an antidepressant, and said, oh, it's completely normal. You take the birth control with the antidepressant and you'll be fine. So fast forward a couple of years, you end up having some other symptomology and they just throw another pill on there. So again, there wasn't much conversation. It was just handing out, oh, just take this. That's normal. It's normal to just take birth control. Oh, and then it's also normal to then just slap an antidepressant on it. So again, not much conversation.
Can you describe the feelings? I'm really interested to know in your own words how those things made you feel. So when you say depression and anxiety, can you describe those feelings?
Mm-hmm. So it really just a sense of malaise, just I felt tired and I was going about my life, but everything just kind of felt like I was in a little bit of a fog. And I don't think I actually understood it completely until I didn't feel that anymore. And you realize, wow, I was really not in a great place. I was able to function. I wasn't severely depressed. It was just like a underlying sense of just feeling off, if that's any way to describe it, or anxious about things that you probably shouldn't be as anxious about. So I just felt chemically, I was just not me completely. So that was kind of my experience of it, if I had to describe the feelings behind it.
Did you ever get to that place where you started to feel anxious about feeling anxious? Does that make sense?
Yes. Yes. I have had times when I've had tattoo panic attacks. And then I look back and look at those times. And that was definitely an experience of panicking because I felt like I was going to panic and I couldn't get out of it. But you're fully aware that you feel off. That's the interesting thing. You're completely aware of it, but you know something just isn't right. And at that time, I just couldn't pinpoint it. And I never would have thought if the pill was causing that. I mean, I'm sure other things in life, even emotionally, were triggering it, but it kind of almost felt like my glass was full of stuff going on with my body. And then throwing the pill on top just probably made everything else worse as well.
I recognize some of what you're talking about, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but depression for me was the inability to feel pleasure. So something that I'd recently found really, really fun, like snowboarding mm-hmm. or kiteboarding or wakeboarding or mountain biking or road biking, suddenly it wasn't scratching the itch in quite the same way that it once did. And I was finding myself motivated to move on to the next thing to try and find that pleasure that I'd once found from the old thing. But I don't know whether you relate to any of that. Did you find that you weren't enjoying things as much as you used to?
Yeah, I definitely would say that I have always been interested in yoga and connecting the body and the mind. So it was interesting. I was experiencing this symptomology while my interest was wellness and the body and movement and all of these things. But I looked at yoga at that time and I said, I just can't feel good about it. I'm not excited about it. And you kind of get frustrated too. So, and the motivation isn't completely there. So I definitely felt like these things I looked at, I wanted to go for a run and I just said, it's not so great right now. Or even relationships, you know, you don't really feel like reaching out to people as much because there just isn't that sense of joy in that moment. Again, it feels like you're just in a cloud and everything. There's not much excitement there. So yeah, I definitely would agree.
And it, I mean, for me, it transferred into my professional life mm-hmm. as well, I should say, where, you know, you find yourself trying to work up to the point where you felt optimistic and enthusiastic and motivated enough to send that email or get that task done, you know, and there were so many other things that seemed like they would require a lower cognitive gear that seemed much more appealing at that time. And I don't know whether you ever noticed any of that kind of thing.
Yeah, I would definitely say I almost felt like I was almost in survival mode. Like fast forward to opening up my yoga studio, I was super excited about it. And then once everything started to compound, I just said, wow, I just got to get the key things done. I have to put out my classes. I need to go teach my classes. And then right after, I would maybe go for a nap instead of maybe looking into different things I could market to or reach out to people. I just said, I just need to do the low level, low hanging fruit I had to grab instead of trying to go above and beyond, because I just didn't have the energy. I just didn't mentally feel like doing it. I knew I needed to. Again, I was very conscious of it, but underneath, I just was just so tired and just felt bleh.
Maybe this would be a good moment for me to read to you the different perspectives section from Tommy's fantastic highlights email series. If you go to nourishbalancethrive.com/highlights, you can sign up for this email sequence. So it's dripped to you in a weekly installment. And the reason we like delivering it in that way is because it gives you a chance to think about things carefully and then decide whether or not you're going to implement in your life. But anyway, one of the sections in that email is the different perspective. And in number 25, Tommy writes about oral contraceptive pills and depression. This week, I'm borrowing a different perspective from Kelly Brogan, who wrote an interesting blog post on how oral contraceptives may increase the risk of depression and autoimmunity. The potential mechanisms are fascinating and line up quite nicely with a blog post I wrote a while back on the serotonin-kynurenine pathways. Many of the problematic aspects of oral contraceptives seem to boil down to an increase in inflammation, which changes the metabolism of tryptophan. Tryptophan is an amino acid, remember, in the aforementioned pathways. And Tommy links to the review papers here. While there are too many to list here, a great number of studies show that a higher level of inflammation are associated with depression and worse mental health. Now, I'm certainly not, and Tommy here writes, I'll confess to not being an expert in the contraceptive arena, but if you're currently taking OCPs, that's oral contraceptive pills, or want an alternative, I highly recommend listening to Julie and Torreyes discuss the fertility awareness method on the Paleo Baby podcast. I will, of course, link to all these things in the show notes for this episode. So, you know, maybe we just need to stop and unwind and unravel this thing. The contraceptive pill didn't work so great for you. So Sarah, can you tell me what you found that's worked better than the contraceptive pill?
So I have started with the female awareness method. I started reading the Taking Charge of Your Fertility book, which definitely opened my eyes to different ways that you can kind of chart your own cycle. And I personally use a basal thermometer, and there's a bunch of different options from the $10 basal thermometer that you get on Amazon to some electronic forms. I use one called the Daisy, which can plug right into my phone, and it just charts my temperature every morning. So if you think about it, instead of taking a pill, you just take your temperature. And I started to do that. And over time, it starts to notice what your temperatures are, and it lays it out on a graph, and it will tell you. It works for both women who don't want to get pregnant and that do want to get pregnant. And it will kind of start to mark down the days to when you ovulate, when it suspects you're going to get your period. And it also compares it to data of other women also using the Daisy. So it gets a little bit more accurate. So I think that's the benefit of using it. So I have been using it for almost a year now. There's no hormones involved. It literally takes 60 seconds a day. It's also kind of forced me to kind of notice my own body and changes throughout the month. There's a little note section. I can indicate if I feel any cramping perhaps, or you can also indicate another way is your cervical mucus, kind of noticing the changes in that as well. And you just get more in tune with you, which is something that I was never taught. I was taught to go to the doctor and just get a pill and not think twice. But now it's a chance I can notice things about my body. And it's definitely has been an awesome thing for me. And I definitely recommend it. but you definitely have to trust yourself. And it is a process for sure, because I did not think that I was ever going to get off the pill until I was going to get pregnant. And that has completely changed.
That's amazing. Yeah, it's a powerful testimonial to the book and to the app. I will, of course, link to those things in the show note. And I can also give testimonial to this method that it's worked both ways for Julie, my wife, and I. It's been great for contraception, which is probably what most people want. But then also, Julie's now 6 months pregnant, and we're about 99% sure that she got pregnant on the first attempt. Because, of course, when you understand your cycle, you know when you're going to be ovulating, then you know when you're going to get pregnant. And even just a few years ago, I'm not sure I completely understood this, that you couldn't really, the chances of you getting pregnant at any time during the cycle were actually quite low. And so really, in order to not get pregnant, you just needed to avoid maybe just a few days around ovulation. And so is that what you've been doing?
Yeah, exactly. So at the moment, I don't want to get pregnant quite yet. So I've used it on the side of noticing when I could get pregnant and then not having sex during that time or using another form of contraceptive. Yes, and you're definitely correct. You ovulate during one day during the month. It lasts for about 24 hours. And if you do happen to ovulate a second time, it would happen during that 24 hours. The catch is that if you do have intercourse before you ovulate, it lasts, sperm lasts in the system for about 5 days. I mean, of course, read the book, but it lasts about 5 days. So you have like about a 5 to 6 day window of when you could probably get pregnant. But besides that, it's very unlikely the other times of the month. And I don't think women know this. So they think every day I could get pregnant, or I just need to walk past a person, I could get pregnant. And it's, again, trusting your body, learning about your own body, and knowing that you don't have to put chemicals into your system as long as you know a little bit more about you. And I think that's the beauty of it.
Yeah, it's very empowering. And of course, I would want my daughter to know this at the appropriate age rather than just going to a doctor and being prescribed a pill that probably is no biological free lunch, right? There's probably going to be a downside to taking the pill, as we've seen.
Exactly.
Talk to me about what you've learned about food. In the beginning, we talked about gluten sensitivity and sugar cravings. Can you tell me about that?
Sure. So I've always been a person who loves carbohydrates and sugar, like a lot of people.
Who doesn't?
But then I know, who doesn't love it? But I think I started to learn as I started to shift my diet and also take care of some of the bacteria that I had in my system. I didn't crave it as much. Once my hormones started to balance out, again, I didn't crave it as much. And it became less of a place of willpower than I just felt more imbalanced, so I didn't really care too much about it. And I felt that was an interesting experience for me, is once I started to balance everything out, I didn't crave it anymore. And it just became a way of life of not having it. Doesn't mean I don't have it sometimes, but it's more of a choice instead of I need it. But yeah, I just started to shift just little aspects of my diet. I was a little bit gluten-free, and I hate to say that, a little bit gluten-free.
It's like being a little bit pregnant.
I know, exactly. So I would do spouts of, or little bits of time that I wouldn't have gluten at all. And then I started to shift into a place where I cut it out of my diet because I did know that I was sensitive to it. I wasn't celiac, but I was sensitive to gluten. And then I would just also start to eat more whole foods. I did start to drink bulletproof coffee, even though coffee, people, it's controversial, but including more fats in my diet definitely sated me a little bit more, which was a big thing. I think even having grass-fed butter or even ghee for people who don't want to have butter, I was using a little bit of MCT oil, just a little bit, because it can affect your digestive system. But just bringing that more into my diet and getting a variety of different types of foods and vegetables, and knowing that you can get a lot of your nutrients from that. To link it back to being on the pill, I was definitely nutrient deficient from B vitamins and magnesium, and my iron was like very low, and I had very low energy, of course, because of that. So I had to, while I was getting off of it, start to supplement with different types of food and look into what foods carry these nutrients. So again, it was kind of education at the same time, trying out things I hadn't tried out before. But slowly, you have to start with little bits or else you get overwhelmed.
Mm. So that approach worked best for you. So for some people, myself included, getting off sugar was a band-aid that was better ripped off, right? Try and slowly decrease intake. I just had to get it over with as quickly as possible and out of my life and out of the house as well, for that matter. You know, it was no good having that box of cereal looking at you every time you open the cupboard door. But how did you find it? Did you find it better to rip the band-aid off, or did you, as you just said, make the changes more slowly when it came to sugar and refined carbohydrates?
Well, I think for me, I'm definitely a person, I need it out of the house. I can't have it around because I can't regulate. I can't just take one cookie and I'm good. I'll eat the entire bag. So when it came to sugar, I just needed to take those things away. But when it came to incorporating different types of food, when I thought in my head, I need to bring in vegetables, certain fruits, I just chose a few different items that I would try week one. And then the next week I might include a different type of vegetable. And then I would slowly learn about each one and then kind of bring them into my diet. I probably stuck a little bit more when it came with carbohydrates. I would just pick ones that weren't as processed, but I would slowly start to pull them out of my system. But when it came to processed foods, I was just get rid of them and then maybe have things like oatmeal or just oats and rice, and then slowly wean off of that a little bit more. So probably more like that, more just take cold turkey with the processed types of foods and then wean off of the other types of carbohydrates.
Does carbohydrate have much of an effect on your yoga performance? You know, I don't know anything about yoga and I wonder about the glycolytic demands of the activity. Do you find that if you don't have carbs, you do worse at the type of yoga that you do?
It really depends. And I would sometimes add more fats into my diet, which definitely helped. With carbohydrates, I think that they are good because they would give me some energy if I was in the mode of kind of burning off glucose for energy, because I do have in my yoga, it's vinyasa based, so it's a little bit quicker. I do have some hot yoga, so it does demand a little bit more energy.
It looks like hard work to me. I've never done it, but it looks like hard work.
Yes, it's great. It is definitely physically demanding, but in different ways. And it's also pulls in the mental aspects as well. Again, it's very holistic, incorporating the mind, the body, movement, all of that. Absolutely.
Speaking of which, in the beginning, do you remember we talked about you have a tendency to get stressed easily on a daily basis? Can you talk about that?
Yeah. So I've always been one to be a little bit more anxious. It's kind of motivated me to do things, but I've always had that tendency. And I think everything I've gone through, from the birth control to having other issues in my system, caused me to be a little bit more anxious. And then again, leading to different food choices and different habits also kind of almost feel like you're on a roller coaster, almost one that you don't feel like you can get off. And after going through this program, I definitely feel as if I am a little bit more balanced. And I think I was always drawn to things like yoga or anything calming, tuning in to help me with that. But anxiety definitely plays a role. And I think it definitely limits you from a lot. Again, you don't realize that until you actually feel better. And I think a lot of people walk around and they don't realize how bad they actually feel and how good they can actually feel just by they think they're healthy and going about their daily activities, but they just feel not so great. And I don't think many people understand that. I was just doing everything.
Well, how can you? You know, you can't know someone else feels. So it's almost impossible to know.
Exactly. Exactly.
And is there anything other than yoga that you've found to be helpful for managing your stress? You know, one of the things, and I don't mean to ask too leading of a question, but I'll just tell you about an experience that I've been having over the last few years. And that's that it's very helpful to reframe things. So, you know, the first person I heard talk about this was Simon Marshall. And he talked about how, you know, you feel stressed out at the beginning of a race, you're having these feelings that you don't want. And you start questioning why you signed up for the race, you know, why my hands are all clammy, and I can't stop going to the bathroom, and I feel a little bit sick. And what if I crash and break a collarbone and all this? You start having these feelings that you don't want. But then when you turn things around and reframe it and start thinking about, well, the reason my hands are clammy right now is because I want to get a better grip on my bars. And it's good that I'm going to the bathroom 60 times, because then I'm going to be lighter in the race. And, you know, you could do this for anything. So for example, last week I got two flat tires. And on the first one, it was like a race, you know, how well can I change this flat tire? Because this is probably going to come up in a bike race at some point. And I want to execute this as well as I possibly can. So this is an opportunity. This is not something to get stressed about. This is an opportunity for me to test how well I can change a flat tire. And then when I got the second one, I thought, well, this is a chance for me to do some more walking, which is something that I probably should be doing anyway, rather than being in a seated position, spinning little circles all the time. So this idea of reframing things, I think, can be really helpful for managing stress. So sorry, I'll stop talking about myself now and ask you if you have any other ways that you are able to better manage stress.
I definitely agree. Reframing and perspective shifting is so important. And it definitely is a practice. You have to do it again and again. I've learned mindfulness and meditation are really key in my life that I've incorporated. And you would think I would have been doing it consistently for years, doing yoga and yoga studio, but you can sometimes forget about it very easily. And I certainly did. And over the past year, I've incorporated it a little bit more. So, and it doesn't need to be just sit in an easy seat and be still. It can be sitting on your porch and watching the birds. It can be you're in the middle of traffic and recognizing when you get anxious and you just start to kind of watch the cars around you. You notice it's a nice day out. And in these moments, you can find a place of mindfulness. It just doesn't have to be completely sectioned off, but I definitely have incorporated that. I've incorporated ritual in my day. I personally like to run, and it's, again, very meditative, and I feel like it kind of shakes out all of my emotions. And I know that sounds a little crazy or a little woo-woo, but it really does. I think we definitely collect a lot of emotions in our body, and it can manifest into physical experiences or symptomology. So for me, running, even actually jumping up and down on the earth, talk about grounding and reconnecting with nature. I literally go outside, put my bare feet on the earth and kind of just shake a little bit. I do dry skin brushing. So it's great for the flushing out the lymphatic system, but it's also part of my ritual and it kind of rebalances me like each day. And it doesn't have to take that long, but just finding things that resonate for you, I think are so important. So those are a couple of the little things that I do.
Yeah, I really love it. And I feel that's what I spend a lot of my time doing is it's not really handing over a prescription, although we do have a really fantastic playbook that Tommy's been putting together over the last few years. It's really about empowering people with knowledge and letting them be their own expert, like finding the thing that's going to work best for you, I think is very, very important. Talk to me about your circadian rhythm. So one of the things, you did a urinary Dutch test, and I know that these adrenal stress profile saliva tests and maybe even the urine tests as well have been getting a bad rap lately. You know, people starting to question, well, what the heck did you just measure? Like, what do we even know? Like, you know, and is it a good idea to start forcing physiology? You know, maybe cortisol is low because your brain wants it to be low. And so why would you ever try and force it? And I would agree with many of those sentiments. But the main reason we keep doing the Dutch test is because we think that circadian rhythm is very, very important in biology. And because of the timed nature of the collection on the Dutch test, it enables us to measure circadian rhythm. So we can see this pattern of cortisol and we know what the shape of the curve should look like. And when it doesn't look the way that we expect, we can talk with the person about what their daily routine looks like, what their exposure to light looks like, what time they're eating. And those are variables that we can usually manipulate and therefore improve the shape of that curve, circadian rhythm, and then biology overall. And Sarah, your circadian rhythm did look kind of off. You know, your cortisol awakening response was quite weak. And then a peak of cortisol happened later in the afternoon, almost as if you were using some kind of stimulant, maybe caffeine, maybe exercise to get going in the afternoon when otherwise you might start to feel a lull. So I don't know, does that ring true with your experience? And can you talk about what your day looks like now to properly entrain your circadian rhythm?
Absolutely. So I was always a person that it took me a little bit of time to fall asleep. But once I was asleep, I would probably want to sleep forever. And I didn't really have those signals that went off to wake up besides, of course, an alarm clock. And then yes, definitely in the afternoon, I would get kind of that afternoon slump, which again, most people think is just normal. And they think, oh, well, this is just my time to drink a cup of coffee. And that's definitely something I did. So I had a look at, okay, my whole entire system and my day. And I do want to bring up light because I thought that that was really important. So at night, I now have, I switched out my light bulb with the red light bulb. And so, and then I downloaded Flux on my computer so that my screen has a red tint to it. Same on my phone. I'm no longer getting blue lights to keep me up. That way melatonin is produced and I'm able to get more sleepy. And now I fall asleep pretty good. And forcing myself also to get to sleep before midnight so all of my hormones would be produced in the proper amount. And then in the morning, I would wake up and take a look outside at the sun, stand on the ground, kind of show my body, okay, I'm awake, I'm ready, get going. And again, these things are free. And they're also things that take 2 seconds to do. Once you have everything like the light bulb and stuff like that going, I feel like it's just part of your day. You don't really have to put any more energy or effort into it. And then you end up sleeping a lot better. So I ended up doing that, having my rituals at night instead of being in front of the TV, watching a show, I would read, or I would just do anything away from electronics, turn off the Wi-Fi. It's just teaching my system to just calm down, eating earlier instead of later. So my body was more calm before I went to bed. So those are a few things. I diffuse essential oils, so lavender at night to help calm my system as well. So just a bunch of little activities I would do. And over time, it takes, you know, a couple of weeks to just get those habits going. But those are a few things that I would end up doing as well.
I love it. It's so simple, so easy, mm-hmm. and so low risk as well. You know, going back to the fertility awareness method, it's that same thing. You know, is there a biological free lunch? Probably not. Is there going to be a downside to taking this pill? Well, maybe. But is there a downside to, you know, taking a walk outside first thing in the morning or avoiding light at night? Probably not, right? It seems like a very mm-hmm. low risk activity to me. And so that's why I love some of these interventions.
Exactly.
Let's talk about your gut. We did a traditional stool culture, the doctor's data traditional stool culture, which is so untrendy now. You know, like there's all these different technologies coming out for measuring what's going on in the gut, and it is so uncool. But as Tommy keeps pointing out to me, the traditional stool culture is still the gold standard in microbiology. And one of the nice things they do with the traditional stool culture is they do a sensitivity test. So they find something which is potentially not good, some kind of microbe, and then they go on and then test that microbe for various different agents, be they herbal or a prescription medicine. So you can then make an informed decision on what you might like to supplement with in order to correct some of the problems that you found. And I have to say for you, Sarah, I mean, I don't know if you mind me publishing. Can I do publish the before and after in the show notes? Yeah. So there was a bunch of microbes, you know, wouldn't like to blame them, all of this stuff that we've talked about, just on these microbes, Klebsiella, for example. But it has been shown to be a potential trigger for certain types of autoimmunity, and it's questionable at best. And just taking some herbs. There's a brand called Rain Trees Formulas makes a product called CF, and oregano oil, the essential oil, did a fantastic job. It's like so simple. Like we're always looking for the next fancy gut protocol that's going to sort out our guts. And those simple two products seem to have done an amazing job on your gut. And we know that because we did the retest, and I can publish the before and after in the show notes so you can have a look at this.
Absolutely.
Talk to me about your transition. So maybe it's not a transition, or at least a very big one, because we're seeing this quite a lot with the people that we work with. They are, many of them, on a path as I was. You know, in the beginning, in 2011, I was working as a computer programmer in the back office of a hedge fund, perhaps not totally delighted with the work that I was doing. And now I just can't get enough of what I do. And so it would seem that I found my purpose in life. And I think that this is also very important for long-term sustained health and maybe athletic performance as well. And many of the people that we work with, they seem to be going through the same transition. You know, they do some tests, they find out some really interesting stuff about their body, and they spend some time doing some research, and they're like, oh, that's what 8-hydroxy-2-deoxyguanosine is, and this is what glycomark is, and this is what arabinose means. You know, they do their own research, and they're motivated by the test results that they've just received. And then they start thinking about, you know what, my job is not that much fun, and how much fun it would be to do this type of work for other people. You know, I feel like that's something I could really enjoy. And, you know, I wondered whether that was what you were thinking, and maybe have you found greater purpose in your life with some of the new things, the new projects that you're working on now?
Absolutely. So I have always been interested in health and wellness for years and years, but I think it took on a new definition for me and in the recent years and during this experience. So I'm excited because I just became a bulletproof coach. So I do some wellness coaching and just kind of starting that myself, and really got excited about it after going through that there are ways in order to feel better and to function more optimally. And so I'm excited to kind of incorporate that in with my yoga. And it's definitely something that I'm looking forward to share with other people, because I think you definitely have to have an experience like this to really know how it feels, and then to see the other side of it, and that it's possible to feel good and to find what you're looking forward to do in your life, and how to just love life and to feel a lot better. So I'm definitely looking forward to incorporating wellness coaching myself in my own practice.
Talk to me about the Bulletproof certification. So one of my most frequently asked questions is, what did you do? What was your education? How did you learn all this stuff? And the answer is, it's complicated and spread all around the internet. You know, I had really great luck starting with the Khan Academy, the organic chemistry. And then I went on and did some of Brian Walsh's training courses, particularly the Metabolic Fitness Pro was fantastically helpful. I did the Kalish certification. I did functional diagnostic nutrition, which was also helpful. And of course, I've been mentored very closely by Dr. Tommy Wood for the past few years, and that's probably been the most helpful thing of all. But talk to me about the Bulletproof certification, because I've not even really looked at it, and let alone done it. So tell me about it.
Yeah. So I work with a client and we discover their goals. And then from there, I'm able to help them to create new habits. And if I notice that something might be going on deeper in their system, perhaps they might need more testing done, then I would hand it over to someone else, perhaps like you or a functional doctor, to maybe dig in a little bit deeper. So having awareness of all these different tests that you can get done, and having other resources, I can connect with a community of wellness professionals. So kind of joining together goals and empowerment, and also testing on a functional level as well. So that's kind of my piece of the puzzle that I would offer a client.
I think it's fantastic. And I think that the things that are moving the needle the most for our clients are some of the things that we've talked about in this interview: circadian rhythm, diet quality, appropriate stress management, having a purpose, getting adequate sleep at night. These are the things which I think are most important, and that everybody can and probably should be doing before you even get into the testing. So I think you're doing really important work. And then being the navigator is also important. We do that for our clients all the time too. You know, like, where do you go next? I can just be the guy holding a signpost going, you probably want to go this way, right? Maybe I can't help you, but I can facilitate you find someone that perhaps can help you. And I think that's important work too.
Absolutely.
Awesome. How was, you know, I just want to ask you a little bit about the logistics of the training. Did you go somewhere in person, or was it all done online with videos?
The first 2 days, in-person workshop in Pasadena before the Bulletproof Conference. So we had training with Dr. Mark Atkinson and a couple other trainers as well. So we were able to meet everyone. And then from there, we had an online training, and then we had teleconference communication with everybody else in the program. And we were able to do practice calls. So it was pretty exciting because we felt definitely connected with other people in the group. And then some of it was us doing practice sessions with people. And then we had to send a recording in and do a bunch of other things. So we did learn a lot as well when it came to nutrition and supplementation and lifestyle habits. So it was a nice combination between mindfulness and kind of the raw facts as well that we learned. So definitely a great experience, I would recommend.
That's amazing. And so you are now seeing clients, people can come to your website and book an appointment with you.
Yep. So I have a website, it's called Satya, and it's SATYA healthandwellness.com. So Satya means truth. So that word has always resonated with me, and I always want to help people find their purpose, their own truth. So I name that. It kind of goes along with my yoga studio, Truly Yoga. So my goal in life is just to help people get through all of their crap and discover themselves and do what they love and be who they want to be. So that's definitely something. If anyone is interested, please contact me, or even if you have questions, of course.
That's amazing. Congratulations. I'm really excited for you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Cheers, then, Sarah.
All right. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.